content of this podcast and any information, advice, opinions, or statements within it are not intended and are not to be used as a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. You should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition you may have, and you should seek the assistance of a healthcare professional for any such conditions. And always inform your doctor of any changes you make or are thinking about making to your lifestyle. My name is Lawrence Rosenberg, and this is the Alpha Human Podcast. Today's guest is Clark Bartram, a legend in the fitness industry. Clark's been on the cover of over, I believe it's 130 fitness publications, and he's inspired millions of television viewers with shows on ESPN, through to Fox, where he hosted the series American Health and Fitness. And as an author, Clark has written several books, including Where Your Mind Goes, You Go. Additionally, as an ISSA master trainer, which is a title held by only a handful of fitness professionals, Clark has helped thousands of men and women transform their bodies and their lives. Clark, welcome to the podcast. How are you doing, man? So happy to have you here with us today.
Brother, thank you for having me. I'm doing fantastic. And I love someone who does the research and knows how to introduce somebody. So for that, I'm very grateful. Just put you on my social media right there. So that's how we do this. We get this message out. I've been watching your podcast. Got a lot of great content from.
Thank you.
Last one I watched was the Navy SEAL Tom.
Yeah, I can't remember. Tom Shea.
Yeah. So that was great. So I appreciate what you're doing. And I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be on here today to share this message that, you know, right here on my shirt, check it like a man.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you. We're honored to have you here today. So look, we're not here to talk about how to get in shape if you're over 50, although, hey, that's a powerful topic to discuss. We're not here to talk about how to boost your testosterone, another subject that's important to men over 50. We're here to talk about a really heavy topic. Ultimately, it's a powerful and uplifting story, but a serious issue nonetheless. So, Clark, you are the picture of what a robust, in shape, ripped, healthy, alpha male, alpha human should look like. And at 60 years old, man, you are crushing it. But with that said, you're facing a major health challenge right now. You've recently been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and you have a really interesting take on how you're handling this issue. And so, man, I'm really looking forward to diving deep into this subject with you. But before we do that, I'd love to get a bit of background on your journey to becoming a really big success in the fitness industry, as well as kind of what led you to join the Marine Corps and how that positioned you for the next move in your life and ultimately your career.
Yeah, so it's been a progression that I look back on, and I can clearly see now in hindsight how it all led to the next thing. So growing up, I was an active kid, running around, playing sports and doing all that sort of stuff. Never would want to go in the house, doing all of the things that an alpha boy should be doing, out playing, climbing trees, you know, tussling around with his buddies, playing football in the side of the yard and doing all of these sorts of things. And then that had me on the path right there. That got me on the path. Because I understand the difference between genetics and epigenetics and genetics and lifestyle modification and all of that. So I was sitting one day in the lunchroom, and a Marine Corps recruiter walked in his dress blues, and it caught my eye. I mean, there must have been 700 kids in the lunchroom, but out of the corner of my eye, I see this figure that caught my attention, and I looked and I'm like, that's what I want to do. Wow. I want to be in that uniform. It looked sharp. The guy came in here, he owned the environment. And I'm like, I want to be that guy. So joined the Marine Corps at age 17. And because of my attitude and how I approach life and the way I was brought up, I graduated meritoriously out of boot camp and did really well, got into the recruiter's aid thing and hung around extra time at home, separated away from my cousin who, and he and I joined together. He didn't do as well as I did. We'll just put it at that. And I'm glad that we got separated, because who knows what path I would have gone down had I got caught up in a different lifestyle than the one that I did. So in the Marine Corps, I was walking out of the gym one day and I saw a sign that said, Marine Corps rugby team now accepting tryouts. And I'm like, I've never played rugby, but I'll go and try. So I went and absolutely loved it. Started going around playing rugby everywhere. And then out of the Marine Corps, I got into the gym business, 24-hour fitness. Or actually, it was family fitness back then. And then it turned into 24-hour fitness. I did the training. I did the sales. I did the assistant manager. I did the manager. Then I ended up owning a couple gyms. And that, you know, I got into the bodybuilding world. And when I was in the bodybuilding world backstage, I see a guy, everyone's taking pictures of him, fawning over him. I'm like, I'm as good looking as him, but why am I not in the magazine? So I approached the photographer, said, I'm always ready if you ever need me. He called me a few months later, said, hey, if you're ready. I said, I told you, I'm always ready, including today. I mean, I'm ready to go anytime. Oh, yeah. So it led to the next thing, and then that led to an opportunity on TV, and that led to the movie. So it's just been stepping stones. And I've been very conscious of what possibilities are out in the future for me.
That's really, I think, a message that a few people kind of take heed of, which is, you know, you saw it throughout your story there, you know, you saw someone that kind of looked like your ideal. And based on that ideal, you thought, well, hey, that person can do it, I can do it. And, you know, that's most of the time people look at someone that they admire and they're like, well, you know, that person's on a pedestal. I can't do that. I can admire them, but I can't be that. And so I think, you know, that certainly for kids and for teenagers in this day and age, you know, kind of getting that sense that actually, if someone is out there doing it and you admire that, the fact that someone is doing it means you can do it as well.
I just need to see one person doing it. I'll give you an example. So I'm 60 now, and I was recently in the gym training with Mike O'Hearn, who's younger than me, but we were training with Robbie Robinson, who is 78. I looked at Robbie, and he is absolutely shredded. He is in better shape now than he was in pumping iron. He's in better shape now than when he competed in the Olympia. He's in better shape now than all of the iconic photos you see him with Arnold and Frank Zane and Boyer Coe and all of the guys at the original Gold's Gym. And I said, that's all I need to see. One guy. If one guy can do it, that means this guy can do it. So that's what I seek out in life, is one person doing something, and then I don't limit my ability to do it. I just keep trying until I get it done. So that's the path that I'm on with my fitness pursuit, is knowing that it is possible to maintain a healthy and youthful physique throughout our lifetime, even in the face of difficulties.
Very strong, very strong. Okay. So now let's dive in a bit. And thank you for kind of giving us some background there on some of that bio. Again, it's inspiring, but I think what's coming up now, what we're going to talk about ultimately is even more inspiring. So your message, I got to say, when it comes to cancer, your message resonates with me in a major way. So I've had two major run-ins with kidney cancer. Once 7.5 years ago, doctors found a grapefruit-sized tumor on my left kidney, which I had removed along with the kidney. Then 1.5 years ago, we had another tumor removed from my liver, which was also the same type of cancer they found in my kidney. It had moved to the liver. So we ripped that out of me. And I got to say, I remember the day the doctor called to tell me they had seen the tumor on an ultrasound. And my head spun, right? Like at first I was numb. And after the call, my mind went down like a dark rabbit hole. I contemplated all the existential issues that one would imagine one thinks about when getting hit with a cancer diagnosis. I mean, your life, your loved ones, your future, all of that stuff, kind of like my God, what's going to happen here? But then the very next morning, I woke up with a completely different mindset. I got out of my own head and I got on the internet and I searched the term how to beat cancer. And from that moment on, I've been on a journey of empowerment. So I'd love for you to walk us through your journey from discovering your elevated PSA levels to your prostate cancer diagnosis. How did that hit you? Like, what went through your mind and how did you process it?
So I'll work up to that point where I was sitting in this room and the doctor gave me the information. But I was just one day in the gym parking lot looking at my blood work, because I'm always telling guys how to boost their testosterone naturally. And just for the record, to set it straight, I don't do TRT. I don't need any of that sort of stuff. I understand lifestyle modification, how to get the most out of my body. So anyway, that's not the topic. The topic is I was sitting there looking at my testosterone and my doctor, concierge doctor, said, "Clark, your PSA is elevated. You might want to go see your GP." I was like, "All right, all right." So I went, go in, and we do the DRE, the digital rectal exam. And I was making content. I had my phone out. I had it on the chair. He didn't know I was recording. I'm bent over. He's got the finger on my butt. And you could hear him in the background say, "Oh, I feel something here, but I'm not really worried about it." So instantly, this is the type of credibility and authority we give doctors. When he said, "I'm not worried about it," I instantly wasn't worried about it. So I kind of let it go. I didn't think twice. And I went on about my life. Then he called me a couple of days later and said, "You know, I'm going to order an MRI." Orders the MRI. I'm waiting, waiting, waiting. Well, the insurance turned it down. And I got a message through my portal. "Hey, the insurance turned it down." Didn't hear from the doc. So I'm like, "I'm not that worried about it." So later he messages me back and says, "Hey, what's going on?" I said, "I don't know. The insurance turned it down." So he pushed back, thankfully, and got them to approve it. And I went in for the MRI. And then on the PI-RADS score, I scored a 5 out of 5. And then he hits me back on a Zoom call and says, "There's a really good chance that you have cancer, probably an 85% to 90% chance." I'm like, "Okay, cool, whatever." And I'm still not even really worried about it at all. I haven't worried about it yet. And that's a good point we're going to make here later. But so then from there, the next step is going in for the biopsy. And it was a random 12-core biopsy, which in hindsight, I would have done a guided MRI biopsy where you're not getting it punched into you. But out of the 12 core samples that they took, 7 came back cancerous. And you know the Gleason score rating. So the Gleason score was 3 plus 4 equaling 7 on 6 of the core samples, and a 4 plus 3 equaling 7 on 1 of the core samples. But just the fact that the numbers are reversed and a 4 is in front of the 3, still equaling 7, they're more concerned with that number 7 than they are the other number 7s of 3 plus 4, because they're more cancerous cells within that biopsy. So they instantly go to then the rating of your cancer, which in my case is unfavorable intermediate risk type 2B. So that then took us to the next level, the PSMA PET scan, which is fairly new technology they've just been using for a few years now, honestly. And that looks to see if it's metastasized anywhere else in the body. Fortunately, it hasn't. So it's maintained within the prostate. But anyway, I was sitting here one day, got the Zoom call from the doctor, and he said, "Oh, by the way, we found cancer." And I was like, "Okay, what next?" I literally, no BS, not for 1 second, not, and this is no exaggeration, not for 1 second did I have a gut punch feeling. Not at all. I went like this. Poof, I went up instantly, because I knew I was the right guy to get this.
That's powerful. You were the right guy to get it. It's quite ironic that That's the cancer you got. One of the things you're known for is sharing knowledge on how to boost your testosterone and how to do it naturally, right? And I've heard you mention the irony of being known for boosting testosterone and then facing prostate cancer. And it is wildly ironic because one of the concerns of boosting testosterone, chemically at least via TRT, and certainly for performance enhancement level doses of testosterone, is its potential for negatively affecting the prostate, at least as it pertains to benign hyperplasia due to the excessive conversion of DHT. But then there are studies that show dehydrotestosterone, DHT, does not cause the prostate to grow, right? So you have these conflicting studies that go back and forth, as well as studies that say TRT is not a risk factor. So before we go further, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. Do you believe that, number one, well, let's start with TRT. Do you believe TRT is a risk factor for prostate cancer? Not enlargement, prostate cancer.
I don't think so, because if that were the case, everybody'd be running around with prostate cancer right now because everybody's on TRT. You can't throw a rock and not hit a guy who's on TRT. And that's one of the issues I have, but that's a whole different discussion. So I do not think that's the issue. I think collectively we are sum total of the last 10 years of our life. So whatever I've been doing for the last 10 years, collectively, stress, alcohol, food, anything that I've done to myself over the last 10 years has come to fruition and said, here you go. You gave yourself cancer. I did it to me. I did it to me. This isn't just some random thing that happened. And here's the thing, is everyone assumes just by the way I look that I live this perfect life. They'll say, Clark, isn't it crazy how you've lived the perfect life and you are the guy that gets cancer while all of these other people out here, and we've made the assumption that someone who doesn't look as good as me isn't living a life that is healthy, which is not the case at all. So I think that's the first thing people really need to understand, is that this is self-induced. Now, the question might then become, how do you explain a little kid? I have no explanation for that. All I can say for me as an adult at 60 years old, looking back at my life, knowing what I've gone through, knowing what I've done, I am responsible for this.
Okay, so before we touch on that, I just want to go back one step. When you said you were the right guy to get this, why is that? Can you expound on that, please?
Yeah, because of the way I look, because of the job that I have, because of the fact that I've created this social media influence that men who will be diagnosed with this at some point, one in seven of them, have been looking at me and been watching me and been waiting to pull the trigger on coaching with me, now are hearing me say, I have prostate cancer. Now the playing field is leveled, because before, I'm somewhat of an anomaly, honestly. At 60 years old, not a lot of guys look this way. Unfortunately, it shouldn't be the case, but it is. It's the world that we live in. So being an anomaly and being someone who understands marketing and getting myself out in front of so many people, now I've been hit with this. That's what I first thought. That's why I have the platform. Now my platform's going to elevate and broaden, and this message is going to resonate where this message wasn't resonating with all of the guys that this one will. Like, listen, bro, I got cancer. And then my goal is this: for a husband and wife to be sitting there together, and I had this discussion last night with a couple, my wife and I did, and the wife says, when after the husband goes, honey, look, this guy got cancer. I better go get checked. She's like, I've been telling you that forever. Why didn't you listen to me? Well, I'm that guy that can speak to that man, because I know this is what I do every day. Men come to me and say, I've been watching you for months, and when you said this, I decided to get started. I decided to change my life. I decided to start exercising. Whether they do it with me or not, if I can be the catalyst to help them move in a direction, then I've done my job. And the same PSA thing.
That makes sense. I think another reason why, you're the right type of person, not that I would wish this on anyone, but that you're the right type of individual to get this cancer is because people will look at you and they'll, it's like, well, hell, if he can get something like this, then can you imagine if you're not, because they're going to assume you live the perfect life, or at least you take care of yourself physically, and this is a physical illness. Men will think, hey, if this guy, Clark Bartram, can get it, well, hell, they can get it. And so I think that's also a powerful point. So have you said you were looking at your blood work, and you're looking at your testosterone, and your doc says, hey, get your PS, your PSA looks a bit weird here. You better go get checked out. Had you ever personally looked at your PSA before this?
Yeah, so we were looking at this brings up a point that finasteride. So I was on finasteride for BPH and
Right.
also my hair because I wanted to keep my hair. I'm a vain guy. So it does both, but in different milligrams. So it's 1 milligram for your hair and 5 for your prostate or vice versa. I'm not sure exactly which way it is, but that's
Okay.
beside. So what it does. So say a man is taking it for his hair and he
Okay.
just gets it on the internet somewhere, which it's available. You can get it anywhere. You can get it in Canada. You get it in Mexico. You can get it from your buddy. There's so many ways of getting these things. If you are not divulging that information to your physician, then you are not understanding that your PSA is basically cut in half when you're taking finasteride. So finasteride, duasteride, any of these things to the block the conversion and all of that, it will cut your PSA in half. So my doctor knew that I was on it because he prescribed it to me, but I wasn't doing that calculation. And when the numbers started going up, I wasn't really thinking about it. And I was getting the DRE done. I had a doctor. He's like, "Hey, do you want me to do a digital rectal exam?" I'm like, "You're the
Hell
doctor. You tell me, I'm like, "No, I don't want you to, but if you think it's necessary, then I'll bend over and do it." So it's you just have to realize that there are so many factors that play into this. And PSA is not an exact science, but it is the first marker that every man should look at to determine if he needs to take the investigation to another level. PSA, consider PSA the check engine light in your car. That's all it is. It's like, hey, go look
Right.
further. What's going on?
So you're taking finasteride, and so you're seeing your PSA level for X number of years, but you're seeing it, and it's not going to be as high as it would have had you not been taking it. And then that check engine light would have been like, whoa, it would be on because it, this was kind of masquerading or camouflaging the issue.
Right. And I got off of it when I was on a call one day with someone and they were telling me how they felt about finasteride. And he said, "Do you mind getting off of it?" And literally, I had a bottle of it right here. I tossed it over my shoulder. Like I said, "I'm off of it. I'm done." I just stopped like that.
Okay.
And I had what they refer to as PSA velocity, a spike. So I went from 4 to 9.8. And then that's when my doctor said, "Hey, go get checked. This is not a good number." So,
Okay. So got it. All right. So I'd like to explore the standard treatment options you were offered. Then I'd like to dive into your research into alternative treatment options. But let's hold off on that for a moment. I'll ask you about that later, the alternative stuff. For now, let's start with standard of care. What did your doctor initially prescribe? How many mainstream doctors have you seen? And hold off, by the way, on Dr. Inkledon for a moment. We'll dive into him as well later on. But how many standard doctors have you seen about your diagnosis? What have you been prescribed? And what are the typical treatments for prostate cancer for all those unaware of what this journey and this process looks like?
Typical treatments: cut it, burn it, radiate it, poison it. One of those things. That's standard of care. So if your urologist, for example, is the surgeon, they're automatically going to recommend surgery. And that was my case.
Okay.
So my urologist is a surgeon. So their focus, their myopic focus is on surgery because that's what they study. So when you're getting their sales pitch, and that's what it is, I want men to understand that every single doctor you go to is giving you a sales pitch because this is how they make their money. I'm not saying they're doing it in a nefarious fashion. This is what they do. You are a patient. They have X amount of time with you, which is not a lot of time in the standard of care world. 15 minutes maybe. You cannot assess and diagnose somebody's situation thoughtfully other than the very top of line way that they do it. Okay, we found a tumor. We know the Gleason score, and we got to get. So that was the first one, cut it out. I did
Okay.
my research, wasn't interested in incontinence or erectile dysfunction, possibly for the rest of my life, because when you cut into those nerve bundles, that's it, you're done. And you could use the freaking Da Vinci robot, you can use the best surgeon on the planet. Those nerve bundles are there, you're at that risk. So for me, surgery was not an option. So the next route that I went to was radiation. I went and saw a guy who came highly recommended from a friend of mine who went and did that. And he has the financial means to get the best care in the world. He searched all over. From what he told me, he ended up on this guy here locally. I went over and got my sales pitch with him. He's on a whiteboard sharing all the stuff with me. And the option there was 45 treatments of external beam radiation. And it just takes a few seconds in a chair. The preparation takes the longest, but they go in, boof, they zap you. You're in and out. You can work. You can do all of that. The sales pitch is great. Hey, you can still work. You can still go to the gym. You're in and out really quick. Well, everyone's really nice. This is this, multi-million dollar machine. All of these things that sound great because this is a very convincing person with many degrees on the wall. And you're like, wow, this sounds great. Until you realize it's radiation. If radiation wasn't a problem, then we wouldn't have worried about the radiation spill in Japan and all these different places. It would have been, oh, that's just radiation running loose. Don't worry about it. Continue with your life. Just radiation. But a doctor will tell you we use it in doses that aren't going to give you cancer. And that may or may not be the case, but it's still radiation. And it's not something that was too appealing to me because with my diagnosis, it's not just radiation, it's radiation plus hormone deprivation therapy, which goes back to the irony. And I'm like, no, this ain't happening. I absolutely refuse to do this. I don't care what you say. Now the word's out on the street with me. So I go from the surgery conversation to the radiation, and there's a guy online that I watch, Dr. Alex Scholes, who is a urologist, and he is against surgery. He has PCRI, Prostate Cancer Research Institute. So that's my kind of mainstay for information. And I saw a seminar that they had where there was a doctor who does the brachytherapy, which is the seed implantation. So I drove out to Palm Springs to meet with him. And when I listened to him, that sounded very appealing. What they do is they take seeds, they go in your perineum, your tween meat, your taint, whatever you want to call it. They put those seeds in real time with a 3D model of your prostate up on a screen. They map them out, they put the seeds in there so you have internal radiation. And then again, because of my diagnosis, there needs to be a secondary treatment. And that secondary treatment would be half of the amount of radiation. So instead of 40, I would get 20. So a little radiation on the inside, a little radiation on the outside. Then I went to California Protons, which they just called me just now. I feel like this is no disrespect to allopathic medicine or standard of care. This is my experience. This is what I'm feeling. Not literally, you're in a sales pitch. So now, today, I just must have received my sixth call from California Protons saying, hey, are you ready? Are you ready to book your treatment? And I'm like, I feel like I'm being so, literally, the guy from Toyota of Carlsbad has called me as many times to buy this electric car that I looked at 6 months ago as California Protons has called me. So their big sales pitch is the machine that they use, that proton therapy, because of the type of radiation, doesn't exit your body. Therefore, there's no high risk of damage to exist or surrounding organs.
Right, because it goes, because it doesn't go through the tissue.
It doesn't go through. It goes in and it stops.
That's so, right. That's what they said. Yes.
There's a proton therapy, which would go through out the other side and could affect your liver or, you know, your anus. So now they have this technology, spacer technology, where they separate your anus from your prostate because all of it's very close. So when you're getting the radiation, you're not at risk of it leaking down into there. So then you have the HIFU, and I've talked to guys at Loma Linda University with the CyberKnife, which is another form of radiation. And what I'm seeing here, like I try and observe and watch this instead of being in it. Mm-hmm. If you're in it, then your emotions play and you can't really observe what's going on. If you look at these names that they give the technology that they're using, it's really very interesting because it's 100% marketing. CyberKnife. That sounds so accurate and so precise and so clean. And you know what I mean? But it's still radiation, and it's probably not a whole lot different than any other form of radiation that you would be getting, whether it's proton, photon, or any of that. And right. Then you go back to the surgery thing. Everybody's doing this robotic surgery now, acting as if the robots are more precise than humans are. And I've heard standard of care doctors saying that's not the case. It's just that these interns are now, this is just the way they're being trained. They're being trained on the robot. That's it. None of these newer interns are being trained old school way, go in there and, you know, carefully cut it out. And so it's all very crafted messaging that you have to be very aware of what they're saying and how they're saying it and understand, like, this is your body. Do you want an organ ripped out of your body first and foremost? Is that truly the way to handle this? So now I'm looking at all of these different things. I've also gone to Mexico and looked at immunotherapy, where they're taking a lot of these chemicals and boosting your immune system. And the sales pitch there is, you're creating an army of little strong cells to go in and combat the bad cells. And if we overwhelm them with good cells, because we're taking out your blood and making it energized, you know, with these different chemicals that they have, it's the way to go. But I didn't think that was the way for me to go either. I got a great place that I could go down right here. And again, it was a great sales pitch, but it just wasn't resonating in my gut. Like, I don't feel like any of this has been right for me so far. The thing that I'm leaning towards the most, if I do this, would be the internal beam radiation with a little bit of external beam. That's kind of, if in fact I have to go the standard of care route, that's kind of where I'm settling at the moment. But I have more investigation to go because I'm documenting this whole process. I'm creating a documentary from my journey. Matter of fact, I have a meeting after this. Guy just flew in from Ohio to kind of put it all together for me.
That's powerful. That's powerful because, you know, you said something there that most people do not realize, and that is doctors are selling their solution. Just like anyone else sells their solution, right? They're passionate about their solution. They believe in their solution. It's a business, and it doesn't make them bad, right? Like, you know, there are some phenomenal doctors out there, but they are selling a solution, and you know, they want to get you in. They want to book it. They want to fill the calendar. You know, they work for a business, typically a clinic or a hospital that demands that they hit certain numbers. So, you walk into a, you walk into a doctor and you get, you know, you've got the diagnosis. You don't know which way you're going. You don't know, you know, you're anxious, you're fearful, you're praying to God, you're looking for some hope, and you get a real confident doctor who comes in with a really strong pitch, and you're like, you know, that's the move. So this leads me to, so first of all, a documentary would be really, really powerful. So you've already spoken to, like, it sounds like 6 or 7 standard of care mainstream doctors so far. Is that accurate?
Yes, and it's all the typical stuff that would be presented to a guy who's going in with this diagnosis. And in most guys, based upon my experience in talking to a lot of guys, don't dig deeper than that, because to your point earlier, to a degree, it's the conditioning, right? We go into a doctor who's very passionate. He's very convinced. He's got all of these degrees. Then we've been conditioned from birth to automatically blindly believe this person because of the white coat and the stethoscope and what they say. They look, man, I think I know more about the options and treatment for prostate cancer than my urologist does. And I'm barely tipping the iceberg on this. So, because he's mainly focused on the surgery aspect, and they're all going to touch on the other ones, but it's really interesting if you're watching and you're paying attention, how they touch on the other ones and talk about them. They'll say it. And I noticed a couple doctors kind of brushing off. Oh yeah. And then there's this beam radiation or this brachytherapy, whatever. And, you know, and I'm like, huh, I wonder why he kind of shunned that one off. That makes me want to go look into this more. And then you ask that guy, why do they shun that off? He said, you want to know why they shun me off? Because my machine costs like $5,000. You know how much that proton machine costs down there in San Diego? And there's only two in California. That thing's $100 million or something like crazy like that. So they got to have bookings. That thing needs to be paid for, man.
That's right. That's right.
It
That's
needs to be paid for. And as convinced as they are that that's the way to go, the bottom line is bills got to get paid. And again, thank God for allopathic medicine. Thank God for these men and women and people who've dedicated their lives to learning their craft and their trade. Because when I do go to someone, I want them to 100% be as confident as I am in what I do. I'm literally the best on the planet at what I do, period.
And there it is, right? There it is. It is a business at the end of the day. A lot of people don't realize it, especially I find those of our generation and beyond. We were taught to, these days there's a lot more rebellion against, you know, authority figures, and you know, a lot of distrust in systems and institutions and authority in general. But for our generation and the generation before us, there's definitely that view of the doctor as all-knowing, all-seeing. And, you know, so this leads me to just a story about, and so I'll kind of tell you this anecdote and then ask you a question off the back of that. So my father-in-law, God rest his soul, was diagnosed with prostate cancer. Now, he was 78 when he got diagnosed a couple of years ago, so a fair bit older than you and me, and definitely not in your physical shape, but he did work out every day, and he ate fairly well, and his blood work, by the way, this is interesting, his blood work was impeccable, which really is one of the diabolical things about cancer, is that you could feel great. And all of the typical blood markers that doctors check for when it comes to overall good health can look fantastic. And with that, and you could, you know, you could have cancer without any overt signs or signals to alert you, except in the case of prostate cancer. That's an interesting one, because there is, you do have that check engine light going on, and or you could have a swollen prostate. But but you could have these, you know, you could, your blood work could be amazing. You could feel amazing. I certainly did when I was diagnosed. And you could have, but you could have these altered cells that are growing out of control, not differentiating and forming a tumor without you ever knowing about it in many cases until it becomes a major problem. Anyway, my father-in-law, his blood work looked great. Everything was great. But his PSA was creeping up and up and up. And eventually he went through the same process as you. And so then he goes to see a doctor that he's picked out at a great medical institution. And he goes with the advice of the first doctor. I mean, the first specialist he visits with, and don't get me wrong, the guy's a top doctor, but my father-in-law didn't get a second opinion, let alone a third opinion. He decided not to remove his prostate and do this 30 plus radiation treatment protocol, as well as hormone deprivation therapy to bring his testosterone levels down to zero. And initially, I got to tell you, he was motivated to conquer the cancer. I mean, I was taking the guy to the gym and we were lifting. He was lifting four times a week at the gym. And every day at home, he was also working out with bands. And, you know, he was pumped up. He was motivated. But then a couple of months after the radiation was completed, so he started radiation and hormone therapy somewhere around July, a couple of years ago. He finishes the radiation in September, but he had to stay on the testosterone deprivation therapy. But then by November, so you got July through November, by November, you could see he was slowing down physically. He was slowing down mentally. It was really noticeable. Then one day at the gym, he was walking towards me from having done a set of curls, and he was wobbly, man. Physically off balance, mentally foggy. So after I dropped him off, I told my wife, you know, to call her mom and have her speak to his doctors and let them know, hey, he's off kilter, something's up, that his faculties and physicality are starting to degrade in a big way. And they had an appointment for the following week set up. So the doctors were just like, hey, bring him in. We'll see him when he comes in next week. However, that weekend, right before Christmas, a couple of years ago, before his appointment with the doctor, he falls in the house. And then the next morning, he doesn't wake up. And I think to myself, if he would have been open to alternatives, if he would have gotten a second or third opinion, if he would have had it. So in his case, would be different than you. Guy's 78, take the prostate out because he's got a tumor in there. Take the prostate out. Don't do the radiation. I start to think, hey, if the guy, I mean, may, you know, incontinence or, you know, lack of a sex life at 78 might not be a big deal for him. You know, take the prostate out. Don't do the radiation. And don't do the hormone deprivation therapy. Don't bring your testosterone down to zero. And you know what? You know, maybe he would have lived another 3 or 4 years. Who knows? Or, you know, the point is, or maybe you do the radiation, but not the hormone deprivation therapy, because I saw the man go from pumped, motivated, and sharp to just foggy and off kilter and off balance. So it was a 1-2 punch between the radiation he might have been okay from. But I'm concerned that you drop your testosterone down to zero for an extended period of time, man, what is that going to do to you, especially mentally? Because I know that's a big part of it. I'd love to dive into your thoughts on the testosterone deprivation therapy, your thoughts on that. But also, let's now get into your treatment plan. Like, you know, hold off on discussing diet, because I know that's part of it. But you know, let's look at the alternative methods that you've looked into, what you're currently doing, what protocols are you undertaking currently?
Yeah. So when you get the diagnosis, what happens is you get inundated with loving, caring people who all have some anecdotal treatment that their cousin or somebody they saw, or, you know, Chris beat cancer or any of these things. It's all anecdotal until you understand what is going on in your life, why you have cancer, because it's all line up 10 guys with prostate cancer. Every single one of them is different. That's why cutting it all out is not the right option. That's why radiating it all is not right, the right option. So as much as I appreciate all of this information that's coming in, none of it applies to me till I understand why. So if I look at my life and determine what it is that I feel got me cancer, the first and foremost, it's stress. Stress.
I'm going to say,
just where'd the stress come from, or how does stress make it happen?
Well,
just
first when you say stress cause, so like what kind of stress, you know, for your example?
Marital stress in my case.
Okay.
My wife and I have been struggling for the past decade plus in our relationship. And it was just, it was getting to the point where, you know, something was needing to happen. And then I get this diagnosis, and this diagnosis may have saved our relationship. So that's a whole different topic together. And look, if my wife is right outside the door, I'm not hiding from anything. I'll never pretend that anything that I don't think is a contributing factor to it, I'm not going to play games. Like, this is real life. Yep. So that's what I feel is the single most contributing factor to this, along with some other lifestyle things. But so what I did when I'm getting all of this information coming in, I didn't want to get overwhelmed with that. So I asked people to stop, including today. I asked somebody, stop sending me stuff. As much as I appreciate your willingness to help in your education on this, I don't want the information right now because I'm on a path. So I reached out to a buddy of mine, Joe Polish. Mm-hmm. Joe Polish is one of the most connected people around, and I trust his judgment. And he said, hey, I got a guy. I think you should talk to him. He's not cheap, but from what I've seen, he's rented in my building for years. I've seen people in and out of this place, and he has a very different approach to treating cancer, whatever form of cancer it is.
Okay.
I reached out, and I hired this guy by the name of Dr. Tom Inkledon, who has his, you know, he's an exercise physiologist guy. He's a power lifter. He's a fitness guy. But at some point along the way, he got into the cancer space for the last 25 plus years and has helped a lot of people.
Okay.
And he's helped them through diagnostic, getting data. Like, this is the key point that people need to understand. You need data on you in order to cure the cancer, not just cut it out or radiate it or poison it or take the hormones away. Because if I do any of those things, whatever caused it, including the stress, still remains in my life, and it could come back. So if I got radiation, I still have a prostate. I could still get more prostate cancer later because there's still a prostate in there. So that's the whole sales pitch to take it out, right? But if you're not dealing with all of these chemicals, all of the toxins, parasites, heavy metals, and all of the other things that you can only find through diagnostic. My urologist never once asked me, had I been exposed to this chemical or that chemical or anything that could be a contributing factor. Mm-hmm. Never asked about how many plastic water bottles I've drank out of, none of that. It's just immediately, let's go cut this thing out.
Right.
That's not curing a disease. So we have over 100,000 data points on Clark Bartram with prostate cancer. Not anyone else. We have data on me. So now that we have all of this data through me pooping in buckets, bleeding in containers, spitting into vials, and what else? Peeing into cups, sending them to different labs all around the world and getting this information back and plugging it into artificial intelligence, measuring it against everything, getting all of this data back, and now going, okay, here is what we feel needs to be dealt with first. Let's eliminate this factor. Now, the whole time I'm doing this, I check my PSA every single week.
Okay.
So I'm keeping an eye on the one thing that most people will agree is the barometer as to whether or not it's getting better or worse. So if my PSA is going down, I'm doing something right. If I got a spike, now I'm going to change what I'm doing. But to this point so far, my PSA numbers have been going down. I go every Monday and get checked. I have a lab right here. I walk in, it's my place. Boom, bam. I put it in the thing myself. I hit the PSA button. I wait 10 minutes, it comes back. So we know there are bacteria in my stomach that needs to go. So all this talk of gut health now that's been on the top of people's minds is real stuff. Like, gut health is important. So we're dealing with my gut health first.
Okay.
We're taking, you know, fiber and man, I got, if I showed you the bags of pills that I take all day long, I don't even ask what they're for. I look and I see, I am trusting this process. I'm not getting overwhelmed and stressing out with more information because, as I stated, stress is part of dis-ease. And I don't want any more dis-ease through trying to learn. And I'm trusting someone that I believe can help me based upon my research on this individual.
This is Inkledon, Dr. Yes. Inkledon? Okay.
Yeah. So we meet once a week and we talk about what we see and what's going on. So recently we just got, since my diagnosis, there have been two more tests that have come out because science moves fast. And he is not opposed to standard of care. He talks to oncologists all the time and they're comparing notes and they're sharing information. So this is not me going down a path saying, fuck these guys. I'm not doing that at all. This is me going down this path saying, my job, I have it written on my whiteboard right here. Four things that I need to focus on. Slow the cancer. You got to slow the cancer down first. It's like a train. You can't stop a train just like that. It slows down. Slow the cancer, stop the cancer, destroy the cancer, and heal the reasons for getting the cancer. That's my mission in life. How am I doing that? Managing my stress, exercising, EWOT training, exercise with oxygen. I got to go fill my tank up right now. Supplementation, getting rid of the bacteria, the bad, the E. coli and the stuff that we found in my gut. Right. Next, we go to the chemicals that we found in my body. Stuff like triclosan that's in your toothpaste.
Triclosan, yes, yes, yes. It's in the hand sanitizers as well.
It's in all of it, man. And we're putting this stuff on us, in us. And it's just, I have a brand now called Legendary Men's Care that I'm part owner of. And it's toothpaste, it's shampoo, it's deodorant. It's everything that we as men use for our toiletries. And we've taken out all of the hormone disruptors. So if everyone needs to go to legendarymenscare.com and get rid of all, I don't care how much of an emotional attachment you have to your toothpaste you used as a kid, throw that shit away. That triclosan, that was the number one chemical found in me. Wow. So we're eliminating that.
Very, very interesting. And I love, you know, that's what's really powerful is that you're using, because the PSA level can give you that check engine light that you talk about, you can actually use that as a real as a frequent diagnostic tool to see how what it is you're doing can actually, you know, have a real effect on your cancer, because you can see how that thing moves up and down depending on what you're doing.
Yeah. And if you have sex or jerk off before you go in and get it done, it's going to be elevated. Your PSA numbers are going to be high. So you have to understand the things that are going to affect it. So a guy could get a false positive on a PSA and get scared right away. Like, I'm going to have a conversation with a buddy of mine who's going in to get a biopsy. His PSA is only 4.2. I said, dude, you don't need a biopsy. Don't go get a biopsy yet. And that's another thing that men need to understand about prostate cancer. It's slow. It's slow. You have time. So people are always, they're always getting on me. Clark, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? You think I'm not doing stuff already? I'm doing more than 95% of the guys on planet Earth are going to do deal with this. And my goal in doing this, for one, is what I just said, those four points, but also educating men, back to my point originally at the introduction, because I've got this platform, I want men to hear me and go, look, bro, listen, you don't need to let your anxiety dictate your treatment. That's what standard of care is going to do to you. Oh, we got a diagnosis of cancer. You're a 7 on the Gleason. You're an 8 on the, you're a 9 on the Gleason. You still have time to research and look around and not just blindly go get it cut out and then wish later that you had listened to me or talked to somebody else or take a step back and started exercising, changed the way you eat, got the stress out of your life, maybe freaking divorced your wife if that's what was necessary, you know?
Yeah. This is... So, okay. All right. So in researching, so for me, and by the way, I love what you said about how you know, and by the way, that's not an arrogant statement to say you know more than your urologist, because anyone who spends the time, because I've done this, you know, for years now, so anyone who spends the time to dive into their health condition, to dive into, say, the type of cancer they have, and who spends a few hours every day reading the studies, reading the literature, diving into it, learning, there will come a point where you will know more than your doctor knows about the cancer you have, because these doctors are specialists, and these specialists are specialists in subtypes of cancer as well. And this thing goes so far down the file tree till you get to that file that they become, you know, that their narrow field of vision is focused on for the most part. First of all, 87% of oncologists are community oncologists. They do no research. That's not their job. Their job is to administer treatment, chemotherapy drugs, drug protocols. 87, there's only 13,500 oncologists in the whole country. And again, 87% of them do no research. So if you do any real research for any extended period of time, you're going to know far more about your cancer than 87% of all the oncologists out there. The other 13%, they're the ones that are at the big university hospitals that are doing trials and really working on advances in cancer. But if you go to one of those oncologists who are bona fide experts, if you look at what they're focused on in their advanced laboratories and studies and the papers that they're writing, it's a super narrow field of how does this genetic anomaly of what could be hundreds of genetic anomalies and mutations that you might have, how does this particular mutation respond to this particular drug combination? And that's what they're focused on. And so they're not going to see everything else that's going on around that orbit because they're not really focused on reading all of the literature taking place around that orbit. And so you really got to do an investigation. And I won't go too far down that, but in researching chromophobe renal cell carcinoma, which is the type of kidney cancer I have, I found studies that suggest, and I want to get your opinion on this. So I found studies that suggest iron accumulation drives kidney cancer as well as a number of other cancers. And no surprise, I've had my iron levels tested and I have very high ferritin levels, which is the protein that stores iron in the body. Anyway, my research led me to ferroptosis. So my research on iron and cancer leads me to ferroptosis, which is a form of cell death that's driven by iron-induced oxidative stress. However, this stress can also lead to a metabolic cellular switch, which can cause healthy cells to become cancerous. And then paradoxically, because iron is also essential for so many fundamental cellular processes, cancer cells will ramp up iron acquisition and storage in order to ensure their enhanced metabolic turnover, which is then associated with malignancy and drug resistance and immune evasion. So the crazy thing is the increased iron uptake should actually kill the cancer cells. So these cancer cells are sucking up iron. It should kill the cancer cells because of all the oxidative stress it should be causing. However, these cancer cells create a mechanism to stop this. They upregulate the production of an antioxidant known as glutathione, which you may have heard of, that neutralizes all of this oxidative damage. So cancer cells are diabolically clever. They figured out that trick. So I found a paper that suggested you can kill a number of cancers, particularly my cancer, by blocking glutathione to unleash the iron to do what it would have done, which would be to cause that oxidative stress and to kill those cells. And so there are drugs on the market, right, that aren't on the market for that purpose, but actually end up as a side effect suppressing glutathione, which could cause ferroptosis. So I looked into that. But you don't want to suppress glutathione for too long because that's just going to end up killing a lot of healthy cells and cause other problems. So then I thought, what if you pulled the iron out of the cancer cell instead of trying to unleash it? Right? What if you chelated iron? And so I need to lower my high ferritin levels anyway because high ferritin, high iron is toxic, causes other problems. So I looked into chelation and cancer. And lo and behold, there are a number of studies, Clark, showing chelating iron kills cancers. But some of the drugs they use for chelation have really toxic side effects. So I started to investigate natural compounds that might be able to do the same thing. And it turns out quercetin is a big one, right? The flavonoid that's found in grapefruit. And another one is inositol hexaphosphate, otherwise known as IP6. So I looked for scientific papers on IP6 and cancer. And I found studies that show broad spectrum anti-cancer activity of IP6, as well as IP6 reduces colorectal cancer metastasis. And so I looked into iron overload as a driver of prostate cancer. And I found this. So I want to show you this. Let me share my screen. Share screen. Okay. So let me go here. Do you see this here? Do you see my screen, Clark?
Yes.
All right. So right here, new research may explain the link between a high level of iron in the body and prostate cancer. So here's the key of this study. In a paper in Nucleic Acids Research, researchers from Cancer Science Institute Singapore at the National University of Singapore focused their investigation on the iron storage gene FTH1, noting the link between iron level in the cells and the development of prostate cancer. So that's number one. That's the first thing I wanted to show you. This is another study. Serum ferritin in combination with PSA, prostate-specific antigen, improves the predictive accuracy for prostate cancer. And here's the highlighted part. The study says we found that high ferritin levels were positively associated with increased PSA and prostate cancer risk. Each 100 nanogram per milliliter increase in serum ferritin increased the odds ratio by essentially 95%. And then finally, this. So this study here about using inositol hexaphosphate, IP6, the natural compound. IP6 is found in rice bran. But they found that inositol hexaphosphate not just is effective with colon cancer cells, but also with prostate cancer. So this says here, highlighted, mechanistic studies by us have shown that IP6 possesses strong anti-cancer efficacy against both androgen-dependent and independent prostate cancer cell types, wherein it inhibits cell growth, causes G1 cell cycle arrest via modulation of cell cycle regulatory molecules, and induces apoptotic death. So this is a natural compound, right? And what I'm curious about, this isn't my pitch for you to start taking IP6, right? I will tell you that I'm taking it to lower my ferritin levels, because my ferritin levels, the upper end of the range on that is like 400. Mine's like over, like it's almost 900. I've already brought it down almost to 800 for the last month taking IP6. But the point is this, what I'm wondering, first and foremost, is with all your data points that you're taking, what I'd love to know is, what markers are you looking at? Like what markers, like what do you keep besides your PSA? Like what markers are you kind of keeping an eye on and looking to see what, you know, what your levels are? So I know you're looking at that triclosan. I think you said you did heavy metals testing. So I'd love to know, you know, what are you keeping your eyeball on blood-wise?
Yeah, blood-wise, it's just mainly the PSA. So with respect to the quercetin and the IP6, I'm taking both of them, been taking
Boom.
Them. Yeah. And you know, this goes back to even COVID. People were taking that for COVID as well. So there's a broad spectrum of benefits that you can get from these natural compounds that we overlook in our world because we've been convinced that a prescription way is a better way to go, when we both know that most prescription drugs come from that natural source. They're synthesized, they're then standardized, and then now we're into this whole thing with prescription drugs when we could do it over the counter in many cases. So with respect to your question about what we're looking at, PSA is the main marker, but what we're doing now, and this is the conversation I had with Inkledon the other day, mm-hmm. these two new tests that we got, one urine and one blood, he said, because of they're more proactive instead of reactive. So they're more to determine whether or not someone has cancer than, in my case, already having the diagnosis. But there are data points that are in these tests that we can use to determine that, what you just asked, specifically what we're going to attack next. So his comment was, okay, we're dealing with the bacteria right now.
Right.
Mainly, we want to get that, because when we look at the line item by line item, what is the most nefarious of all is the bacteria in my gut, in the levels that we found it. With chemicals, there's you know, I was watching someone the other day, an influencer, talking about everyone, he suggested after the age of 50 should do some sort of chelation process just for the aging factor alone. Yeah. So we will probably, after we deal with the gut, we don't want to do too much at once, because I'm already taking a ton of pills right now. So we don't want to do more on top of that to stress my system out even more. Then I'm doing the EWOT training, and people question the oxidative stress with as much oxygen as I'm breathing in during my cardio sessions. But the supplementation and all of what we're doing should be balancing these things out, because when you were reading those studies, I could imagine a lot of people going, fuck it, dude. I'm just going to get it out. This is just too much for me to think about. That's what most people are going to do.
Yeah.
That's why standard of care is so appealing to so many people. So once we get the data back from these two new tests, one blood, one urine,
okay.
He said, I need to talk to the CEO or whoever of this lab. And I believe it's Tempus Labs is the ones doing the testing, which is a really renowned lab. He wanted to talk to them to really understand what these tests are helping us determine specifically with me. So they're going to look at my results. They're going to discuss my results. Mm-hmm. And then the guy who understands these tests better than my guy does, he's now referring out, and he's going to go, okay, I'm trusting this person to help me read these tests to give you the best possible next best move.
Right.
So now we're going to have another marker to start looking at. We don't yet have that other marker that we're looking for, because we have yet to go back in and do the next gut test to see if all the supplements I've been taking for the last month and a half have eliminated the bacteria and given me basically homeostasis or balance back in to that part of my body. You know?
Right. That's powerful. That's powerful. And one more question on that is, what was it I was going to ask you? Oh, I had it. I lost it. It'll come back to me. Okay. Now let's talk about diet, because I know that for you, diet, nutrition, that's going to be like a cornerstone of how you're approaching this. So would love to get your thoughts on diet. What is your eating look like, and has it changed since, you know, all that you've learned?
So I've always been kind of a low carb Mediterranean style type of eater. It just resonated with me. It just made sense.
Okay.
You look at some of these different areas of the world, blue zones, and how people eat. There's a lot of the blue zones that have a Mediterranean diet. And I've always kind of subscribed to that sort of style of eating. So as we dove into the diagnostics on me, I started questioning. I was like, hey, how do you want me to eat? And he sent me his PDF, and it's basically a Mediterranean diet. Oddly enough, today, I had a guy reach out to me and say, Clark, I watch you on the internet, and what you eat is poison. So I will admit, based upon what I had talked about earlier, the last 10 years of your life is really why you're where you're at today. Mm-hmm. If I look back over the last 10 years of my life with respect to what I ate, as far as the purity of the food, mm-hmm. for example, it wasn't grass-fed and finished. It was whatever I found at the grocery store, because part of what I was doing is trying to get people to lose weight. And I thought, not everybody, like my mindset is this: not everyone is going to go get grass-fed and finished. If I'm trying to help a man in Ohio lose 75 pounds because he's working in the steel mill every day, I got to speak to him on a level that he's going to be able to connect with to help him lose weight. That's where my mind has always been. So if I went to the grocery store and got a $5 discount thing of meat that was at the end of the aisle, I never thought twice about it. Right. Never thought twice about it. Right? So I have to question now, did that contribute? Probably. So what am I doing with respect to that in the Mediterranean diet? I'm now sourcing my food from a much better, but do we really ever know? That's the question. Do we ever know? Unless I got cows in my backyard and I'm growing everything in my backyard, we don't even know. I can't go to the farmer's market on Tuesday and trust in the fact that that farmer didn't spray his shit with something to make it grow. I don't know this. So people that are on their high horse and reach out to me and say, Clark, the way you eat, I'm like, come on, bro. And that's what I said to this guy today. I appreciate where you're coming from, but let's not pretend like we all got it figured out and we're all doing things perfectly. Here's the bottom line. We live in this world. This world is full of endocrine disruptors, stressors, oxidative compounds that will mess you up, all sorts of different things we're being attacked by on a daily basis. The best thing we can do is manage these things to the best of our ability, right? Because mm-hmm. who am I to put my standards on somebody else? They got to get it. The saying is now there's levels to this shit, right? There's levels to this shit. There is. So with food, I'm eating a Mediterranean diet: salads, vegetables, salmon, avocado, blueberries. Here's what's really interesting about your human body. I never ate onions. The only way I would eat onions is if they were caramelized. And I would tell the waitress, listen, if you don't burn the shit out of my onions, I'm sending them back. Because they would never burn them. They would always come back raw.
Right.
I now can eat raw onions. And when you look at raw onions in cancer, there's a healing property with an onion that, you know, links up with cancer. Why is that happening? Why did suddenly Clark Bartram start being able to eat onions when everyone that knows me says, don't put an onion near this guy. He'll throw it at you. But now I can eat them. Does my body know that? And is it craving something to naturally heal me? Like, think about this for a second. Now you extrapolate that out. I'm suddenly craving a lot more fruit. I'm eating a lot more blueberries and things and watermelon. Someone the other day said, watermelon's horrible for you. I'm just like, shut up, man, you idiot. People, man.
Listen, what you're saying, you know, resonates, because when you get to a, you know, if you put aside cravings for, you know, those for comfort foods. Yeah. And when you're in the zone physically and mentally, when you got your nutrition dialed in, when you've got your, you know, your mindset, when you got these things dialed in, your instincts become very sensitive. And so when your body's telling you, like, because same thing was happening to me after doing this for a long time. I never ate fruit, man. I never ate fruit. Slowly but surely, I started, you know, for some reason, started craving it more. And I wouldn't eat it because of the sugar. One thing led to another. I stumbled upon a study that showed that my type of cancer actually doesn't ramp up the metabolism of glucose like other cancers ramp up. And that it actually has a different nutrient supply chain to foster growth. And I was like, you know what? I could actually eat some fruit if I want. Man, I'll tell you what. Now, all of a sudden, for some reason, by the way, I'm craving broccoli. So it's like, all, you know, so I get what you're saying. I think a lot of people, that's another challenge for a lot of men that are going to get what you have, or people that I'm gonna get what I have, all the other habits you talk about have to get cleaned up so that you're doing what needs to be done to remove whatever is exacerbating the inflammation or causing the inflammation or causing the cancer in the first place. You got to deal with that. A lot of people going into this have so many other issues lifestyle-wise that they got to get that shit straight. But that, you know, once you get that stuff straight, you become like a fine-tuned machine. And you could, you know, so that when you talk about that onion thing, man, that hits home.
It's real. You know, and another thing I'll say is, say someone is going standard of care, mm-hmm, with respect to your comments about lifestyle right now. It's never, I've never been in a meeting with anyone else with cancer, so I don't know if this is talked about or not, but I'm going to make the assumption that it isn't based upon the conversations that I've had with these doctors.
Yep.
But maybe it's because of the way I look. But I don't think that they're saying, hey, it's 4 months until your surgery because I'm so booked out. Here's what I need you to do. I need you to go to the gym and bust your ass. I need you to change the way that you're eating. I need you to handle whatever stress you have in your life, whether it's with your wife or at work or whatever it is. I need you to kind of look at the things that are in your house. What are you putting on your body? What are you putting in your body? Are you putting cologne on? Like, what are these things that you're doing to yourself that may have been a contributing factor to this? Because my goal as your standard of care doctor is, I never want to fucking see you again after this.
Right.
Once I cut this shit out, I don't ever want to talk to you again. I'll take the Christmas card saying, hey, doc, I'm still here. Thanks. Didn't piss my pants either, you know, whatever. So that I don't think happens. And that's what I loved about when I drove. So this is the lengths I'm going to. I drive 6 hours to Scottsdale to go see Inkledon for 10 minutes.
Right.
And pick up my supplements and come back. But the first time I went in there to create the actual relationship, because he does have a doctor in there, you know, he's a PhD in exercise physiology. So I created a real relationship, doctor-patient. Mm-hmm. But when you go in there, You don't see people bald from chemo walking around with dark bags under their eyes carrying a IV thing. It's a gym. You see old ladies in there deadlifting or freaking one arm rowing 70 pounds.
Jesus.
You see people on EWOT machines. You see people lifting weights. He's like, Clark, if these people have to go and get their pancreas cut out, I'm going to make sure they're stronger than they've ever been in their entire life, all the while trying to get rid of the underlying factors that they got this stuff. That doesn't happen normally in this world. And what I'm saying is, listen, brother, if you go, I'm talking to the guys out there, if you go get standard of care treatment, take your ass to the gym, get your food right, get your shit together, get your mind right, get rid of the stress, relax, don't be anxious, and go do what you're going to do. But understand that that didn't treat the reasons you got cancer. There's something else going on in your life that you need to deal with. And if you don't, you're being negligent.
Yeah, very strong, very strong. And I love that. I love what you said there about going to see Dr. England on and you walk into a gym. Man, that sounds like the greatest doctor's office that I've ever heard of. I've never heard of such a thing. That's amazing. And I just remembered that thing that I forgot that I wanted to ask you. All the testing that you've done, have you done any genetic testing?
Yes. Yeah, we've determined a couple of genetic mutations that so. And I don't remember exactly what they were and what mm-hmm. happens, but what we do know is we now can plug me into a database. I am now forever able to put information into a database. So if you were a doctor and you recommended you give me mm-hmm. some sort of medication for diabetes or whatever, I take the medication that you prescribe, plug it into this database. It measures it against my genetic code and tells me whether or not my body's going to have a positive or a negative response to it.
Wow.
If it's a negative response, I can go, hey, doc, I'm not good with this medicine. Can we try a different brand or a different version? We plug that in and it says, okay, based upon what we found in your genetic profile, this is going to work better for you. And the same goes with radiation. We can look at my genetics and determine if radiation is going to be something that jives with me and works.
And is this program through Inkledon as well, or is that a different program?
No, that's just some database that's out there and available. Like everything that he does, he just did what you did. He pulls it up on PubMed and he shows me, Mark, look, it's right here on PubMed. This is what all these doctors are looking for is stuff on PubMed. He said, you know what you can do based upon what we found out about you instead of hormone deprivation therapy, in order to increase the absorption, if you will, of the radiation into the tumor, you take resveratrol. Just go get resveratrol. Drink a shit ton of resveratrol. You could take a little bit from wine if you want, but get most of it from a good source and put it in your water, drink it. That's going to give that tumor the ability to absorb that radiation where you don't now need to go get hormone deprivation therapy. And back to your father-in-law or your grandpa, whoever it was, I believe it's because of the hormone deprivation therapy that he ended up the way he did.
I would agree with you 100%. I watched it happen. I watched it over a period of a few months. I saw what happened once his levels finally, because you know they keep trying to knock it down, they knock it down, and eventually when it came down all the way, within a few months, I saw him degrade away. I saw him degrading, and I was like, my God, you know, this is just, yeah.
Think about this real quick with respect to that, because this is a very touchy subject for me, given the fact that I'm the testosterone natural boosting guy on the internet.
Right.
Lupron is one of the drugs that they would give you.
That's what he was taking. Okay.
So that will eliminate your testosterone down to zero. I will go into menopause. and all of the things that happened because of that, right? And I, as an alpha male, if you want to put it that way, that is not even on my radar. So here's the irony of that in and of itself. If a man were transitioning from male to female, they would give him Lupron.
That's right.
But prior to giving him Lupron, he would have to see a psychologist, two psychologists for up to 2 years of saying, hey, do you really want to do this? Do you really want to strip yourself of your testosterone? Do you really want to go down to zero? Do you really want to go into menopause? Do you really want to do all of this? When I go in with prostate cancer and within 2 minutes, they tell me I need to do this with no. Now people are going to say, Clark, but it's going to save your life. Well, let's talk about quality of life for a second. Well, Clark, it's only for 4 months. You watched it. You, better than anyone, you physically watched it before your eyes. You watched a man. And I'm telling you, it's from the hormones. It's from ripping the testosterone out. I'm telling everyone, follow your gut. My gut's telling me absolutely no fucking way. None.
You got to follow your gut on this. No one can tell you different. You mentioned, and then funnily enough, and I've heard you mention this. I've heard this before. The study is there. If anyone wants to look for it, but they also find that they can move the needle with supra physiologic doses of testosterone.
That'd be the way I'd go.
If you're going to go, you better go the other way.
Yeah, I would even be a test subject to do that, in all honesty. And then people can call me out online. You're on TRT. You're like, yeah, damn right I am.
I got a good reason.
Someone's going to grab that soundbite and look, Clark's on TRT.
I told you he was on TRT.
Exactly.
He's doing 2 grams a week. But that's the interesting thing. That everything is not as clear cut as the research says. The research that is pumped and promoted, it's not always clear cut. You will find, if you take the time, you will find that there are going to be studies, again, there are going to be studies that show one thing, like, again, DHT conversion in excess causes, prostate issues. Then you'll find, actually, no, that's not the case. You're going to find these studies. And, again, with this super physiologic dose of testosterone, they're finding that, again, and you can look up the study, that knocking it down to zero or excess amounts can move the needle. So that's an interesting thing.
All of these studies, though, I need to make this point. All of these studies, whether they're ones that I want to trust and believe in or not, it's all confirmation bias. Every one of these things can be cherry picked. I had this conversation with a guy today who's giving me all this information. Nobody can convince me that any study out there is not cherry picked data. It's what they want the outcome to be. They're going to find the information based upon the outcome that they want, just the way it is, because you could just be on Instagram and watch somebody and they're convincing you that a low carb diet is the way to go. And they give you all these studies. And then you go to the next guy and he's like, no, high carb is the way to go. And they give you all these studies. And it's like, what do I believe? You believe your gut. You believe what you know is right for you. That's really the bottom line. You do your homework. Mm-hmm. You understand what's out there and what's available for you. You find out who's the best. You look at some of the data and make your own decision as to whether or not that is valid to you. Like, it's really all up to you, man. That's the bottom line that I want to get across to men.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think that if you spend the time, and you can't abdicate your responsibility to your own health. You can't abdicate your responsibility to be the decision maker in your own recovery and in your own healing. You can't offload that responsibility to a so-called expert. You have to involve yourself in critical thinking. You have to become an expert on your condition if you want to have a fighting chance to make it out to the other side. And so, okay. So I wanted to, just a couple more questions. I know we're kind of getting close now on time. So you have these lifestyle principles that, you talk about, that's part of your, that's part of your protocol. That's part of what you teach others. Can you talk a little bit about, these, I think it's five, you call it five lifestyle principles.
Yeah. This has become the logo for what I do. It's mindset, meals, movement, community, and integrity, in that order. The question I get oftentimes, and I'm sure you've gotten this as well throughout your life, what's more important, diet or exercise? Neither. Until you get the mindset right, because I could put you on carnivore, paleo, intermittent fasting, keto, cabbage soup, or any of these different ways of eating. Mm-hmm. If your mind is not set to do it long enough, in my case, to heal the reasons I got cancer, right? Then what good is it if I'm just going to instantly go back after my discipline wears out? It has to be, your mind has to be set. There's a difference between discipline or desire than having your mind set. Right. So that's the big piece. And then mindset, meals, movement, community is a big one. I need to be surrounded by like-minded men. I need to be surrounded by people who are going to support me. I need to be surrounded by a village that's going to help me get through this thing. And then integrity, living your life with integrity, like really being honest about what I'm doing, really being honest about how I'm living. And those two factors, it's different applications of integrity, but it's the same thing. So if I go to Inkladon and he asks me, how many times have you done EWOT training since I saw you last? And I lie and say 50, and I only did 5. What good is that if I'm not being a man of integrity with how I'm reporting to the person I've trusted with my care? So with respect to what you said a minute ago, I've never felt more alone in my life than I do right now. I have a ton of people around me, but to your point, it's up to me. Bottom line, it's up to me to get through this, period. So,
truer words never uttered. So a couple of quick questions. You've mentioned it a number of times, EWOC training. I can't let you go without explaining what the EWOC training is and why you do it.
So I'm doing it because I went to Ingladon's place. I saw a bunch of people at his place doing it. He's got 5 different stations where people are on ellipticals. They mm-hmm. got a mask on. There's a giant tube up there full of oxygen, and they're breathing in oxygen while they're training with red lights on them. And he's like, look, I'm blasting them with all of this different therapies and these different modalities based upon what each one of these things does for them. Mm-hmm. So oxygen does what oxygen does. We know that our bodies need oxygen. That's how we survive. So getting oxygen in my body while I'm exercising does this mainly. The number one thing it does for me is I can push myself harder. So if I'm normally level 5 on the Stairmaster, I'm going level 10 now. And grinding, I'm on that thing. I got a weight cut suit on like I'm wrestling.
Okay.
To cut weight, I've got the suit on, I got the hood up, I got the mask on, I'm breathing this oxygen. I'm going at level 9 or 10 for 20 minutes straight, and I am dripping sweat when I'm done. The purpose behind that is to get rid of the chemicals that we found in my body. Eliminate that. Now, people will tell you, Clark, you can't sweat out toxins. I don't believe that for a second. I've had people say, you don't sweat out toxins. I don't believe that for a second.
You absolutely can sweat. I mean, that's the set, you know, that's one of the ways we release toxins. I mean, that's
just you're going to get rid of them. You shit them out, you piss them out, you spit them out, you breathe them out, and you sweat them out.
Right.
If you can absorb it through your skin, why wouldn't it be expelled through your skin too?
But why do it? I mean, don't get me wrong. I can understand the incredible stamina building that it, and of course that's going to have knock on effects. I might even also understand, all of that oxygen stressing out the cancer cells. But moving that aside, couldn't you do a sauna to sweat it out and be just as effective if that's the purpose?
Yeah, I asked him that because I didn't want to do all that hard training. Because the first day I did, I swear to God, I wanted to die, man. And it was my ego that wouldn't let me because he's watching me. He's like, you got to finish this bag before 15 minutes.
Okay.
And he didn't think I was going to do it. And I'm like, oh, bullshit, man. So I started, because he had me maxed out on the elliptical. I was cranking and going hard. I said, can't I just go in the sauna and sweat this out? Because I got a steam room, I got a sauna, I got all that stuff.
Right.
He said, nope, you got to do it with exercise. And that's all I needed to hear. I didn't even question him one level further. But my belief is just that getting stronger and putting in that effort cannot hurt you.
Absolutely.
It can help you. So that's enough. That's all I need to hear. Okay. That's all I needed to hear.
I love it. I love it. And listen, I agree. If you can sweat it out and get stronger and gain more stamina, yeah, 100%.
And get over the bitch-ass dude in your head. That's the number one thing. You know, when I'm putting that suit on and I'm filling that bag up and I'm like, gosh. The argument that I have with myself and when I overcome it, I'm like, yes. When I go to get in that cold plunge and the argument that I have with myself and I do it, I'm like, yes.
And which argument? Which argument is worse? The one going into the cold plunge or the one going onto the Ewok machine?
I would say the cold plunge. Cold plunge sucks, especially right now.
Oh my God. Okay, so what? Two last questions. The first one is, you've mentioned resveratrol.
Uh-huh.
And I know you're, like you say, taking like 100 pills or whatever the case may be. But what would you say are really some of the key ones that you're taking? Resveratrol is one. I know you mentioned IP6 and quercetin, but that's, you know, that's only because I brought it up. You know, that might not be, you know, part of your protocol as far as like, hey, here are the top five things I'm taking that I'm really focusing on. All the other stuff is ancillary.
So really interesting thing is that when Inkledon gave me all of my supplements, he gave me a supplement called Pectisol.
Oh, and yeah, go ahead.
The company had just reached out to me, not knowing that I'd been given this diagnosis. And I was in conversation with them. And then I got Inkledon, who prescribed it to me. And I'm like, I am meant to be the face of this brand. So I use Pectisol, and it's, you know, it's pectin, right? And it's, so I'm using that. I'm using the apricot seeds because I watched that documentary about that guy's second chance or second whatever it was called.
Right.
I'm doing the soursop. I'm doing the black pepper oil. I'm doing all of these things that people have thrown at me. And it was really a buddy of mine. He called me one day before I called him to tell him about my diagnosis. He's right. Like, hey, I got to tell you something. I got colon cancer. I'm like, oh, I got prostate cancer. So he said, promise me, Clark, that you'll take all this stuff that I'm taking. And because I love this guy so much, I said, I'll get it. And even though it was anecdotal to me at the time, because I didn't really know what caused it, you know?
Yeah.
Figured. It can't hurt. And I asked Inkledon, I'm like, is this stuff going to hurt? He's like, nah, take it.
You know, I got to tell you, it's amazing that you said that because so In one of the podcasts I did on cancer and natural compounds, I talked about just a bit, but I'm like literally looking at my notes here. Man, that's what you're the pectisol. The it's basically it's modified citrus pectin, MCP. Man, let me tell you something. A lot of people, most people will have never heard of what you've just said. But man, this stuff is powerful. So there, I mean, there are studies, modified citrus pectin, anti-metastatic properties. There's a anyone out there who's listening to this, read this paper, modified citrus pectin, anti-metastatic properties, one bullet, multiple targets. The authors reported that commercially available fractionated pectin powder, commercially available, it's
Keep
not a
reading. I'm gonna
drug.
forget it.
It's not a drug. You don't need a prescription. It induced apoptosis in prostate cancer cells, approximately 40-fold above non-treated cells. So, and I took that is really interesting. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So resveratrol, pectisol, that's a great one. Very interesting.
This. So you got the capsules, or you have the powder that you can do it in.
There you go.
So a product that goes alongside of it. I have to right here. I'd be remiss if I didn't. Prosticade. Yeah. So Prosticade is the other product that works synergistically with it.
Okay.
So so talk about a serendipitous kind of moment where they had just reached out to me because they're like, hey, we really love your social media content. And then me getting this diagnosis. So I immediately I said, listen, I don't associate with any company until I really do my due diligence. And they put me on the phone with one of their researchers and doctors. She was fantastic, so bright. We connected on such a high level. And when I got this, I started using it. What I noticed instantly was my pee started flowing better because sometimes I didn't even know if I was peeing. Like
Wow.
I couldn't feel like, am I peeing right now? Because I'll wake up in the middle of the night and I'll just go sit on the toilet and pee like a woman because it's a whole lot easier and it's cleaner that way too. But anyway, I
I hear
couldn't
you. I do
tell.
some of that as well.
I would have to put my hand down there and like piss on my hand because I couldn't tell.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I started taking the Pectisol, it freed me up. To the point where now I actually have pressure again, which is a good thing.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, like this, I really, really highly recommend. And if guys need a link, they can just reach out to me. But Ingledon had his own. There's like doctors private label it. And when I got it, I'm like, dude, I already got a ton of this stuff. So, yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. Okay. Last question. So I love your I love what you said before about what you have on your whiteboard there. Slow the cancer down. Stop the cancer or crush the cancer. What were those four things again? Can you say
Slow
it
the
again?
cancer, stop the cancer, destroy the cancer, and heal the reasons for getting the cancer.
I love that, man. That is powerful. What would be your, to close this out, what would be your message to other men who are getting, who just got diagnosed and they're here, you know, or they're, you know, or they've been dealing with this for a little bit. You know, what would be your message for them? How, you know, what would you advise if you were, you know, if you could just really just say one thing to them, what would it be?
I said it earlier, don't let your anxiety dictate your treatment. Take your time, understand this is slow growing. You have time to do your research. It is up to you to take your health into your hands. Don't trust everything that your standard of care doctor says because they're your doctor. Look at alternative ways of dealing with this and realize that cancer, like the PSA, is simply a check engine light. Unless you do a diagnostic on why you got the cancer and deal with those things, this could manifest some other way in your body. It doesn't mean it's gone just because you got rid of your prostate. It doesn't mean it's gone just because you radiated something. What it means is you dealt with the check engine light. It'd be like sending your wife to Las Vegas in the car, 4-hour drive from here. And she said, honey, the check engine light came on. And you walked out and said, oh, I'll fix that. And you get a hammer and you smash the dashboard and send her to Vegas in that car that's probably going to break down 2 hours into the drive. That's what you're doing when you rip it out, radiate it out, poison it out, or get rid of your hormones. You're simply smashing the check engine light.
Sage advice. Clark, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
So there's a foundation that I have called Check It Like a Man. That's the first place I want people to go and look at helping fund my documentary and all of the research and everything that I'm doing to be the spokesperson for this diagnosis. Also, I want men who have not yet been given the diagnosis to eliminate that fear or that anxiety from their life by going to my website, clarkbartram.com, and getting my in-home blood test kit so you don't have to go to a doctor. Like, we'll test your PSA in your house along with 7 other markers in your blood. So do that. Like, go to clarkbartram.com, follow my Instagram page, because there's a lot of content that I'm putting on there, plus a lot of other stuff that helps you just be a healthier version of yourself, that hopefully you don't get this diagnosis, or any diagnosis for that matter. You're just living in a healthier body and eliminating things by making yourself aware of what's going on in your body.
Yeah, powerful, powerful stuff. You are the, as you said from the beginning, you are the right man to have gotten this diagnosis, the right man for the job. God bless you. Thank God that you're out there. Clark, really appreciate you joining us today. And yeah, man, take care, stay strong, and we'll talk again soon.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it.